Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Today, on Stories We Live By, we'll discuss geniuses and madmen, madwomen, anything else that seems to come along that will be of interest. Let me start out by saying that human beings often feel that if there's a word for something, then there must be something real that the word refers to. Tell you a story. When I was a kid in camp, I went to a camp, summer camp, and it was very dark at night in the woods, and I learned to love that, being away in the country in the dark, escaping from the city. My counselors woke us up once. I was about 12 or 13 at the time. And they told us they were taking us on a snark hunt. And we all asked, what's a snark hunt? What's a snark? And how do we hunt them? And they said, don't worry, you'll figure it out soon enough. And they took us into the field where there was a lot of dense bushes surrounding the field. It was a baseball field. And we all had flashlights. And what we were supposed to do is that half of us, about a third of us, stood on one side of the bush with open pillowcases. And on the other side of the bushes were kids and counselors with brooms. And then between them facing the bushes were people with flashlights. And what we're supposed to do is start flashing the lights back and forth, screaming very loud, while the kids with the brooms beat the bushes. And the kids with the pillowcases waited for the snarks to come out. It was a remarkable experience. When I became a counselor, I used to repeat this with the kids that I worked with. What was amazing is that within a couple of minutes, we all saw the snarks running. When we all described the snarks, we described them in totally different ways. And for years after that, I know people who were convinced that there's something called a snark, and it's a four-legged animal of one type or another, and this was amazing. The fact that there was a word snark was enough to get us to see snarks. Now, why do I tell this story? Because so much of human reality rests on words that really don't refer to anything anymore than a snark refers to some kind of an animal. There are no snarks. There are no geniuses. There are no retarded people. And certainly there's nobody who's mentally ill. Now, there are different people who adapt to the world in different ways. Right? And when you're so-called normal, which means you behave in a consistent way according to the norms of your group, and that's what normal is. Normal, I don't think, has any much more meaning than an adaptation to your family, to your subculture, to the country you live in reasonable ways. You're a good citizen, and you're normal. And in our society, normal means you get up in the morning, and you brush your teeth, and you toilet yourself, and you have breakfast, and you go to work. And if you don't go to work, you're retired. You do some things that create activity for yourself. You stay busy. That's normal. But lots of people, and I used to say this all the time, and I say it anyway today, everybody's normal till you get to know them. There's no such thing as an individual who doesn't have a piece of them somewhere that is creative and potentially a genius. And I'll explain what I think that means. Or somebody who is potentially as crazy as a bed bug. And I use the word madness, which is the word they use before the shrinks, before the doctors, before the psychopharmacologists try to convince us, the psychiatrists try to convince us that when people hear the voice of God telling them to throw themselves off a roof, that this is a biological medical illness. I don't believe that for one second. It may involve some illness, but most of the time we have no way of ascertaining or proving that there's an illness behind, a real medical illness, a diagnosable medical illness, treatable or not treatable, but diagnosable medical illness that sits behind the behavior of an individual who wants to throw themselves off a roof because God demands it, or washes their hands 500 times, or sits and cries for what day after day because they claim they don't want to live, or is so anxious and so filled with panic that they're disorganized and they don't know what else to do. Similarly, I don't believe there's anything called a genius. All of these are words that stand in substitute of real understanding of the minds of people around us. And as long as you're normal and you're labeled normal, until you look closely and you see that there's creativity and there's stupidities and there's anxieties and depressions in all of us, as long as you're normal, we don't go beyond that word. This person's normal. This is a nice person. This is a nasty person. And when we say nice or nasty, we think we're explaining something about how that individual works, how their mind works. And the fact is, I don't think we understand very much about ourselves or the human mind. What we have are labels. And mental illness, mental disorder, and genius are mere labels. The difference being that the mentally ill person is held in contempt, and once an individual is held up as a genius, we admire and respect them. It's interesting that throughout history, creative artists of one type or another, I forget the artist, was a wonderful exhibit maybe 20 years ago at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and the entire museum was given over to his sculptures and paintings. Everybody proclaimed him a genius. When his work first came out, it was not understood, and he was considered crazy, a madman. Einstein was a madman until he became a genius. Freud was a madman until he became a genius. The label changes if we respect and admire the work of the individual, but it's mad or crazy if we don't respect the individual. The problem being, neither word helps us understand very much about how the human mind works. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One, because we're blocked from even asking questions about ourselves. Most of the time we don't want to ask questions about ourselves. We're afraid of what we'll find. But also because so much of our daily activity and our adaptation to the world is unconscious. There's nothing conscious about it. For example, how much is 2 and 2? Anybody listening to this or who will listen to this will instantly say 4. How did you get to 4? Where did it come from? The fact of the matter is we have no idea how somebody solves a mathematical problem. They can show us the work, but most of the time these things occur very rapidly and they work on a purely unconscious basis. Most of our processing is unconscious. Interestingly, when we make a decision, neuroscientists have shown that the decision is made probably before we consciously become aware we've made the decision, which is interesting. So that there's all this processing that takes place is unconscious. So we don't understand very much about the human mind. And so when we see somebody do things that we don't understand and admire, we call them a genius. And if they do something and we hold them in contempt or it frightens us, we call them mentally ill. Now, let me just break the concept and talk a little bit about geniuses, or those we call geniuses, and point out that when we do look at these individuals, you do find certain commonalities to those who we admire and respect, like Freud, like Einstein, like Darwin. First, they have a tremendous interest in something, in some aspect of the world. Very often, they have an interest in many aspects, but it very often focuses down to one particular area of the world. All good scientists and all artists, whether we call them geniuses or not, have a dedicated interest to something, a passion, an intense passion for something. Why don't all of us have a passion for something? I'm going to discuss that in a few minutes. I think that all of us, as I said, have the potential to be a creative force in the world, but most of us don't, because our heads are so filled with stories that demand obedience, that demand we don't think very much. A famous political activist in the United States tells a story. His father was a fruit and vegetable man, and he said to him, Ralph Nader, ran for president several times. Many people don't like his politics, but I've always respected the man's outspokenness and individuality. Made his money showing how the large corporations that would try to make all of us into happy morons who don't think but just simply purchase stuff, whether we need them or not. His father said to him, "So what happened in school today, Ralphie? Did you learn to think or did you learn to believe?" And anybody who is a genius thinks. And they think about the things that they have a passionate interest in, and they think about them intently. The second thing about genius is the unbelievable amount of hard work the individual puts into trying to understand the phenomenon or the material that they're dealing with. Somebody once said to me that Beethoven's work, he was a genius because he could just put these symphonies together and they sound so spontaneous and they sound so wonderful. And the truth of the matter is, the man worked endlessly on his symphonies. He had a passionate interest in music. It consumed him daily. And many people who knew him couldn't understand or liked and liked the fact that he had this tremendous interest. But he would work on a symphony, the famous Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. He tried 100 endings to that symphony, one after another after another. I don't know if it was 100, but many endings, until he found one that sounded spontaneous. What else? Those who are who are geniuses have an interest, and they work very, very hard, and they're very, very dedicated. And very often, what makes them genius as well is that they escape from the stories that I've just talked about, which would have us be turn away from the world and simply believe what authority tells us. Give me the answer to something, my students would say. And when I became a good teacher, and I did become a very good teacher, a good professor, I would say, "You tell me the answer." And I would give them things to struggle about and not give them the answer, things that I had either made up or things that I had read about. For example, take the sentence, "There is nothing to be afraid of." R.D. Lang, who I consider one of the more creative forces in psychiatry, said that sentence expresses both our greatest comfort and our greatest fear. Isn't that wonderful? And I would say to my students, and they would demand I give them the answer. And I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Not until a student came in and came up with a solution to this conundrum. How can the sentence, "There is nothing to be afraid of," be both the thing that calms us the most and terrifies us the most, or among the most? Okay? Anybody wants to call in with an answer? I could do a whole show. Maybe the next show I set up, I'll ask anybody there who wants to discuss that sentence. Love to do it. Make an interesting show, I think. The individual who pulls free or never gets commanded to think like everybody else does, who's not punished for deviant thinking, it is the individual who very often ends up being a creative force and a genius. Or Most of the discoveries of geniuses, and I look at Einstein and Freud, were really very simple. It's true that Einstein had to put his discoveries into mathematical form, but Einstein had learned, I'll give you an example, had learned that nothing can go faster than the speed of light. And one day he's now shaving and he's looking in the mirror and there's a light bulb above the mirror. And he said, what would happen if this bathroom began to accelerate and go faster and faster, the whole room? He said, there would come a point at which the room would grow dark to my perception. Why? Because if the room starts to go faster than the speed of light, the light from the bulb couldn't reach him. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Darwin's theory of evolution, he looked at what was. He studied animal behavior. He studied the breeding of animals, of horses. He watched the world around him. The same was true of Freud. The same was true of anybody who is a creative force and a scientist. There is this interest. There is the willingness or a passion or a need to do hard, endless amounts of work. And then there is this fascination with the world in this some aspect that involves the interest in which things that we're all capable of seeing, are seen and written about or talked about. That's genius. Right? And I do believe that most of us are raised to be obedient, happy, non-thinking beings. I don't want to, again, beat up on anybody's religion, but it wasn't until I started working with Catholic patients. I was raised in a kind of a ghetto, mostly Jewish people, and I had a first patient who was Catholic, and I'm not going to go through the whole sad history, but she had a hatred for the clergy. And she was constantly telling me she was going to hell. And I said, why? You haven't hurt any of these clergy. And she finally said to me, you really don't get it, do you? I was taught that my thoughts are as sinful as actual behavior. Okay. Much of Christianity, the Protestant faith, got rid of the confessional, the Catholic confessional, because it caused so much corruption and gave the church such power. But unfortunately, they didn't go back to the Judaic mode or the Buddhist mode of saying, your thoughts are your own. Behavior is to be judged. That was one of Freud's really great dictums. Judge behavior, never judge the thinking and the feelings of an individual. That has to remain free. And when individuals can get their thinking free, or their thinking is left free by their families, they have the potential, if they form interests about the world, to really become a creative force in the world, to look up interesting new things that are not so new, that very often are there to everybody, but not... I'm not observed because we're taught, don't see there, believe what the authority tells you. Can I prove any of this? I can't. Do I believe it? Right down to my soul and the soles of my feet. You'll forgive my pun. What about madness? Madness is not a sickness. It is an escape, I find. Because I've worked with many people who live psychotic or called schizophrenic or seriously mentally ill. They, too, have a potential, the same potential for genius as anybody else, but often they're caught up in a life situation, in all kinds of double binds, all kinds of internal or external terrors, and they are in need of escaping from what for them is unbearable emotional and physical pain. Now, it's true that that emotional pain for one person can be a tickle for somebody else, right? which is why when our mothers do something to us or our fathers or whatever, the escape is not necessarily something we have to work hard at. I think it's incredibly important that we live with people who will forgive us, who will understand us, who will separate out the things we do from the things we think and feel. One of the great books by George Orwell is 1984, in which people are tortured by the thought police in the Ministry of Truth because they don't want loyalty simply in behavior. They want loyalty in thought and feeling. One cannot merely say, I love Big Brother. One really has to mean it. And as O'Brien says to Winston Smith, the character, the hero character, you will love Big Brother, and if we tell you that 2 and 2 are 5, you will agree that 2 and 2 is 5. And unfortunately, many people are raised under exactly that situation. Their religion demands it. The political system demands it. We have all kinds of examples in history and all over the world where people are told that, for example, God is looking at their thoughts and God will put them in everlasting hell and torment for what he sees there, that they can't help because their feelings are their feelings and their thoughts are their thoughts. And so they have to escape from themselves. They have to escape from the terror of being who they are. And there are so many examples if I could give, but basically, when we look at madness, I find it is a turning away. And when I analyze with an individual who is turning away from themselves, I find, and I've said this many times, but I can repeat it in the remaining time of the show, that there is a self-hatred because they believe that in some way they are morally defective. That I'm a bad person, I shouldn't have been born, I'm no good. And as I've said many times before, I don't think anybody ever comes to this conclusion without an awful lot of help from the adults who have raised them, who themselves often are struggling with exactly the same thing that goes from generation to generation. There is a fear of the world, and many people, I was watching a show on Africa and the terrible wars going on in parts of Africa and Sudan and other places, and the horrible things done to children and women to make them loyal, to bring them, to break their spirits. Anxiety, there is a belief in help that one is helpless to do anything about it, and there's a hopelessness, a despair. And put those together, you have in that individual an unbearable, unbearable state of mind that has to be somehow dealt with. And often that individual now makes up fantasy, makes up escapes. And by the way, let me talk about words that relate here. In our modern society, we see people as machines. The machine is the metaphor. I always laugh when somebody says that the human mind is like a computer. We built the computer, and the computer didn't build us, but we use the computer as the metaphor, a literal metaphor for what we are. And so when an individual doesn't function normally, we label them as psychotic or mentally ill in some form, and we say they have had a breakdown. And I don't believe human beings break down. Washing machines break down, automobiles break down, machines break down. I suppose in a limited way we can say that the body does break down. But the human mind does not break down. What I believe happens to individuals who are what we call crazy, really crazy, is that they find themselves in an unbearable situation and attempt a breakout. Not a breakdown, a breakout. When I've worked with people successfully in my life who are in a state of emotional crisis and in the process of breaking out and being labeled by my colleagues having a breakdown, I discovered it was at that moment that the individual, if given the right help, can make a breakthrough. And I know many, many people who have had moments of terrible emotional, intellectual, and spiritual crisis, who, with or without help, were able to break through to another level of genuine creativity and a better and different life, an escape from the people and the situations that were torturing them, were putting them in these terrible binds that created the self-hatred, the anxiety, the terror, the helplessness, and the hopelessness. Unfortunately, many don't. More don't than do. And our entire system of helping these individuals, and unfortunately, as far as I can see, more and more of our system of school and education, is to say that when the machine breaks down, tinker with it, change the hard drive, give it pills, electroconvulsive shock therapy, stop the breakdown. When in fact, it is an act of creativity that the individual is working with that the rest of us neither understand or want to understand, that is trying to get them desperately, in the only way at that moment they know how, to have a breakout and hopefully some kind of a breakthrough to another transformation, another story that is a better one for them to live by. So, I see I have 3 minutes remaining. My friend Barry Rickett said he was going to call in. I don't know what happened. He didn't. But whatever. And I think that's enough for today. If anybody wants to call in, if anybody is hearing this, I still can't figure out how to use the chat. It now covers the whole screen, and I'll find out in the next week or so. I'll put in the energy to find out how the chat works. So I don't even know how many people might be listening. If anybody would like to call in, the number is 646-716-7756 for a comment or for a story or for whatever. If not, I'm pleased with today's story. I think we talked about a lot of interesting stuff, at least I did. And have a good week, everybody. And hopefully I'll be back next week with another story. I'll be gone all of August, so I'm not going to do any stories. I'll suspend the show for August, and we'll see what happens after that. Okay, folks, goodbye. Whoops, let's see, who's this? Hello? Hello, you're on the air?
Hi.
Yes, hi, who are you?
Hi. I guess there's a delay in my listening and your phone, because I heard you saying something completely different when you picked up. But anyway, my name is Des.
How are you?
I'm good.
I've been listening to you for such a long time.
Well, I've been listening to your show. I don't often get a chance to because I'm normally busy at this time, and I actually got a chance to listen in today, and I just I don't really have anything to really add to your topic because I think, as usual, you kind of say it all very well.
Thank you so much.
But I would like to say that, I think you are definitely a natural teacher, and if you're still thinking about going back to teaching, you should, because you're...
Well, you know what? I can't get a job.
Oh, you should be able, you
no,
know...
No, you can't. Let me tell you, I have sent resumes to every college within 50 miles of where I'm living here in Florida. I don't even get a response. And by the way, it's not me personally. I know the same problem. They hire kids with master's degrees that will work for next to nothing.
No.
And a whole bunch of us old fogies, retired people, and they just simply don't want
it. Well, I'm sorry to hear that because
yeah,
I
thought I'd come down here and I would have a part-time teacher. I don't want to go full-time again.
Yeah.
That's why I enjoy doing the show because I do reach, I think, a substantial number of people through the archives rather than through the show. I mean, I have some good numbers there. Although I'm now trying to get my license here in Florida, which
is post-mortal
task.
Yeah.
Huh?
I remember you saying that on another
yeah.
show.
Oh, by the way, I could do a whole story. I don't want to alienate these people because they're dangerous. The bureaucrats in Florida are a type that I can't even imagine.
Hey, I'm from Florida originally.
Are you originally?
Yes, I am. I believe you're in Miami. I'm from like the Panhandle. I was born.
Oh no, that's all the way north. No, I'm in Southeast Florida, but I'm about 50 miles north of Miami.
Right. Okay.
I'm about 50-60 miles north, but it is.
Well, you're the one that should be teaching. I mean, you have the experience. You know,
I agree.
Oh, you know,
I agree. So I keep updating my resume, and every once in a while, I try to get a nibble or a bite. But whatever, you know, you can't do what you can't do.
Well, and it's not over yet. So
I never give up. I don't give up. But what'll happen will happen. I mean, it's okay. It really is okay. I mean, I played 5 hours of golf today, and I'm having a near-death experience.
Getting any better at that?
Oh, I'm so bad. It's so terrible.
Hey.
Yeah, it was particularly bad. But but the heat was awful.
Oh, I know. I don't miss that about Florida.
Yeah, it was in the 90s today, and I thought we were all, I don't know why we continued playing. We should have stopped after 10 or 11 holes, but whatever.
Well,
anyway, I love that you called. Thank you.
Well, I was glad that I got to actually listen in live.
And if you ever really want to, you know, tell a story and come on, I'd be more than happy to share a show with you.
Oh, that might be fun. My story right now is just such a tricky one, and you know, and that's why I like listening to your shows, because it really helps me. Really helps me sort things out. I mean, more than you know. So you are very, you know, really good at putting things in logical, down-to-earth perspectives, you know, and I'm not always able to reach those conclusions.
Well, if you want to talk online, it really can be, you know, when you talk with somebody else, it really does help.
It really does.
You know, because then you sort your thing, you come to own your story. I've said that number of times. You sort of come to own your story in a different way than if you're just listening, because I'm talking more abstractly. I'm not talking, you know, that I give particular examples, but when there's another person there, and that becomes real fun for me anyway. Fun for the person who's doing it. So.
Yeah, I've thought about it. It's just mine is, right now, I mostly view my story as kind of in a sad sort of light, and that's not necessarily something I might, you know, be very comfortable, talking about, you know, at this point,
that.
But I'm not going to, you know, rule it out, you know.
I totally respect that.
So, but, you know, I just wanted to call in and say, you know, hey, I
thank you.
Always.
Yeah, and
always
there is a delay. When you're talking on the phone, it's different than what you hear on the show. There is some kind of delay.
Yeah,
and I
that
think
was
it's
weird.
Done so that I won't, there's no feedback.
Well,
I never figured it out, but there is. Because when I was watching a show, I was listening to one of the shows, and I was waiting online to call in. What I heard on the machine and what I heard on the phone were two different things.
I don't understand.
I don't know which is the delay and which is not, but that's okay. The technology.
Maybe I'll figure it out after this.
Okay, I'm going to hang. And
okay.
You're always welcome to call back.
Okay, well, I hope I'll have another chance to, you know, actually, I'm tune in live again, so I just wanted to say say hello while I can.
Okay.
So, you know, I enjoy it always, and I'm sure a lot of other people do, too, and,
you're
still teaching.
I can't give that up. That was the best part. Actually, you know, when I did therapy, what was called therapy, I believe that's basically personal education.
I absolutely agree.
If therapy is what it's supposed to be, you learn something. You learn something useful, often about yourself, about your relationships, stuff that you could use to make changes in your life.
And that's why you would call it counseling, right?
Counseling is all right even, but the word treatment grates on me, because the word treatment means something needs to be cured.
I think it means it's derived from caring, though. I think the root word of therapy, doesn't it? I don't know. I believe.
But I know how
root.
It's used, and I know how it's meant, and
right.
It's involved with insurance forms and all of that. And if we want to use the word therapy in terms of caring in a non-medical way, that's perfectly okay. But then everybody sort of has to understand that's what we're dealing with.
Right.
That all the people out there who think they're sick and diseased and have something wrong with their brain because they're unhappy or confused, And that's a terrible thing we've done to people.
It's hard to get over with, you know, because I've had to seek help, and then I've kind of had to kind of try and get past the idea that, you know, this has meant that, you know, I've had to take on labels that, you know, are, you know,
right.
You know, basically say that I'm sick or
yes, but
you know,
once,
whatever.
Once,
so.
See, once you do that, that's your soul is owned by those who use the label.
And I don't know. It took me a while to get over, but to tell you the truth, I mean, I've always been, you know, a free thinker. So, but it was hard to get over.
Free thinker is a person in danger.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
free thinkers are people in grave danger.
It got me into a lot of trouble, and
I'm sure it did.
It could be why you're not being hired right away too. I don't know.
No, actually, they don't know. Most of the people who hire me, I'm mainstream. I was always mainstream.
Right.
And nobody knows, you know, unless they've read my books in advance, they don't know what I really believe. About that. And certainly when it comes to teaching, I teach a regular course in psychology.
Right, because you think you have to. So, but
okay, I have to go.
All right. Well, it was great talking to you.
It was great talking to you, Des. Take care of yourself.
And you take care of yourself, too.
Bye.
Okay, bye.